Hello and welcome to another edition of Center Circle Live. Marty Thompson and Armin Badakian are back with you again this week. No special music.
Yeah, I was waiting for you to say welcome to another edition of Between Two Ferns, but we didn't get it this week.
So ferns are still here, and an update for those at home. The one fern or the one plant that we weren't sure was a fern or was not, it is.
What?
It's a Chinese fern, yes.
Amazing.
Yeah.
You heard it here first, folks.
I mean, okay, if you want to Google a Chinese fern, you look at it and you tell me that you wouldn't immediately think fern, but I didn't want to say. I didn't know for sure.
Yeah, you didn't want to spread misinformation. There's a whole market of fake fern news, and we don't want to contribute to it.
Absolutely not. There's real news in our podcast, I'm hoping so, from the CPL and from the Canadian Championship and CONCACAF League. If my eyes aren't deceiving me. Let's start in Alberta, like we mentioned on last week's show, this kind of Alberta special, and starting with Cavalry FC dropping out of the Canadian Championship 3-1 on aggregate to Montreal Impact.
Before we get into that, what is the Alberta special?
Like, the meal, you mean?
Yeah. Like, Halifax has donair. Montreal has, like, poutine.
I think it's got to be Alberta beef, man. I think it's got to be beef, yeah. Like a good steak with, like, roasted potatoes and, like, garden vegetables, I think.
So if I were to go to Alberta, like, if I were to go to Edmonton, if I were to hit up that mall.
West
Edmonton Mall?
I skated there once, actually.
Did you?
Yeah, it was great.
There's a skating rink in that mall?
Yeah, yeah. It's like it's on the bottom level and you can see up and people can, like, you're on the third level of the mall. You can just, like, look down and see presumably me when I was 7, like, falling everywhere. But
damn.
Still skating around.
What a weird place.
There's the, mini golf. Played mini golf there.
That's cool.
It's great.
Isn't there a roller coaster?
Yes, there is. Yeah. Wow. There is. Yeah. Yeah.
Is there an Old Navy?
I think there was.
Okay, then it's a good mall.
I wasn't going to Old Navy mall when I was 7.
But, why not, you know, man? Best jeans in the world.
I wasn't looking for, like, Oxford shirts or whatever. Well, I don't know what.
What were we talking about? Alberta special.
Yes.
You figure it's like steak?
I think it's steak, yeah.
If anybody is listening in from Alberta and we're completely wrong and you guys have, like, some weird oxtail burger or something, let us know.
But, yeah, maybe Steven Sandor can let us know. Yeah. KPL.ca contributor.
Give him a call and be like, hey, Steven, what are you having for lunch?
Subway. Oh, okay. I'm sure that counts.
Yeah, that counts. All right, let's get into it. I'm sure people are rolling their eyes like, oh, these two. We had a pretty big week for Calgary and for Edmonton.
Yeah.
Both of them featuring in El Clasico on Friday. But before that, we had Cavalry FC taking on the Montreal Impact in Canadian Championship play, which is, I think, probably where we should start. Pretty good game, I would say, in terms of, you know, respectability of showing. It was a commendable performance, but ultimately a 1-0 loss in that second leg, 3-1 overall in aggregate. And Montreal moves on to play Toronto FC in the final. Another 4-0-1 derby. Don't tell Montreal that. But what do you think, Marty? For me, it was a respectable showing.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I think the early goal there from Anthony Jackson-Hamel, it just kind of took the wind out of Cavalry's sails.
You know what it was? It was exactly like a professional MLS goal in a tournament. Like, you could tell there's been, like, a decade's worth of, you know, planning for that goal. Mm-hmm.
And it just came, for me, it just came at the right time for the impact. Yeah. And credit to Cavalry. I think that they probably should have scored at least once before halftime.
Yeah.
Dominic Sator gone on a couple nice headers.
If Sator scored another series-winning goal against an MLS team, he'd be suiting up for Toronto FC today, probably.
Transfer would come in.
Yeah, no. No way that Toronto FC or Montreal or Vancouver don't immediately go, wait a second. Because, like, genuinely, I think he started to enter the conversation of, like, center backs for John Herdman's team.
He stands out.
Yeah.
He really does.
And he's, you know, a threat on both sides of the camp. So, I mean, the idea for the Canadian Premier League is that it's a showcase for our players, for Canadian players. But, I mean, if they can move on to higher, you know, platforms, and, like, if Europe is an ambition of his, I think this is a good body of work. And, like I said, if he had scored against Montreal, if he had forced that away goal, or even like a 2-1 result off of something, like, there could, you know, he would have been made.
I think the story in that second leg, same with El Clasico, is just Cavalry unable to score.
Yeah, they were definitely missing Jordan Brown. I think Nico Pasquadi was, you know, as his usual self.
Malanga seemed a little bit isolated at times up there.
Yeah, Malanga was trying his best. I think it wasn't the same kind of inspired attack that we saw against the Whitecaps, but I also think that the Whitecaps' back line contributed to that. Mm-hmm. I think the Impact is just a really good defensive team, so it's hard to break them down on a bad day for them. And I mean, I think in the end of the day, Cavalry announced themselves to the world of Canadian soccer. They've made, you know, their city proud. We saw a packed Spruce Meadows ATCO Field like embrace the sport in a real way. Like, there was a video posted on Twitter. It was a like perspective of a supporter at like in the corner of one of the stands, mm-hmm. the main grandstand. And dude, that is an incredible atmosphere. Mm-hmm. Like, that's that looks like really fun to go to. So you know what, Calgary, like, soccer has come to the city. You've done well. You ousted the Whitecaps. That's a memory that I don't think anybody expected us to have off of year one. And so the Canadian Championship ends for the Canadian Premier League on, you know, a pretty respectable, commendable note. And that's all we can really ask for.
Yeah.
Except the Voyageurs Cup and all that follows.
So actually, it might be beef on a bun. That might be Alberta's meal.
Your mind is still on food.
I'm still on food. Okay, let's switch to El Clasico. 0-0, still at Spruce Meadows. I think Nico Giantsopoulos was the story there in net for Cavalry.
Yeah, he was a giant among men.
There it is.
Should I not? I'm just going to apologize. I'm sorry. I'm sorry I subjected you to that.
8 saves. In credit to Edmonton, I mean, I think they had like 10 shots from inside the box.
Yeah.
15 total. Dude, like, they were peppering them.
So I remember distinctly the Easton Ungaro's run down the right wing.
Yep.
Like 6'6", center forward, bursting down the right wing with pace, cuts in, and then immediately challenges for like a shot on goal. Who is this kid?
Yeah, that's one thing that people haven't said enough about Ungaro is his speed.
Dude, gets fast.
Especially in the box, in his turning is exceptional.
Yeah.
His mobility is
dude, if
is
I was 6'6", I don't know if I could put 6 steps together. This guy's bursting down the right wing like faster than Arjen Robben with like a free cut-in.
So Edmonton with the draw there against Cavalry. Should be of note here.
Not much to talk about, really, is there?
No, but I think that getting a draw off Cavalry, I think by the end of the season, it's going to be impressive. Because Forge, York, and Edmonton, kind of the other three teams in this supposed top four we've talked about, they've only managed 5 points off Cavalry. And I think Forge beat them, and then there was a draw. So to grab points off Cavalry is actually quite rare.
Yeah. And we're recording this before Edmonton takes on Valor later today on Monday. So there's an opportunity for Edmonton to actually top the table by the end of the day. I think that is kind of the big talking point. The actual 90 minutes of football didn't produce much in terms of back and forth chances. I think both teams had penalty shouts that they'll probably regret.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it becomes a case of, okay, we're 6 or 7 games into the fall season. Things are sort of falling into place. This time last year, Cavalry had already basically run away with things. So things are different now. There's more challengers. There's more names being thrown into the mix. Forge currently sits on top. Edmonton can be at top with a win or a draw. So, I mean, really, it's heating up in a meaningful way as we approach that midway mark of this second stanza, as we've put it.
Well, let's switch to Forge. 3-1 over Valor on the weekend. Anthony Novak with 2 goals, 2 very tidy finishes.
I wonder if I can tell this Anthony Novak story on the podcast. Maybe I will.
Okay. Yeah, Armin does
Anthony
have a personal
Novak
connection.
Was one of the strikers of the St. Mary's High School soccer team when I attended. It was a close friend of my brother's who's just 1 year younger than me. And so Anthony Novak is somebody... I actually went to school with Jonathan Grant as well, so the Forge connections...
Oh, really?
In Forge are kind of like very close to me in terms of Pickering, Ontario life. But Anthony Novak used to polish like 2 entire containers of Chinese food for lunch and then would eat everybody else's leftovers. I've never really? Seen a guy who could just eat as much as that guy has. And now he's a professional soccer player. I guess it makes sense. The appetite of an athlete.
Yes. Yeah. And I think his appetite maybe shown through on that second goal. Yeah. The way he outmuscled 2 Valor defenders and just like potted it through beautifully.
First of all, bravo for the connection. Yes, he has been feasting on goals lately. But yeah, yes. Anthony Novak is another player that is emerging under the Forge spotlight. I think he's got his opportunity now that Emery Welshman is no longer with the club. Mm-hmm. Now that center forward spot is basically his for the keeping. And he's done well with it. Every time he's played, he looks like a goal-scoring threat. And the thing that I like about him is he just fights. He's a fighter, you know? He doesn't just eat. He fights.
I can't believe we haven't even brought up his post-game on One Soccer where he just said he credited his breakfast for the 2 goals.
It makes so much sense.
Anthony Novak, come on the pod. We got to talk about food, man.
Yeah. We'll talk about the Alberta specials that you... What is it? Meat on a bun.
Yeah, yeah. Beef on a bun.
Shout outs to Dragon Jam Restaurant in Pickering, Ontario.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Why not?
Can't say I've ever been. Shout out to Matthias Janssens too with another penalty save there.
Yeah, that's fair.
Another good performance from him, and also Chris Nanko getting a second goal of the season.
Yeah.
That answer back right after Petrasso scored that penalty.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta sort of feel for Valor there, because any chance of a return, like a come from behind, was almost immediately extinguished. Mm-hmm. But that's credit to Forge being ruthless, and I think they're going to need that ruthlessness heading into their CONCACAF League matchup with CD Olympia, which is on Thursday, and then the reverse leg in Honduras will be next Thursday, the 29th. So they're going to need that. They're going to definitely need to be clinical in front of goal. They're going to need Anthony Novak to be very hungry.
And then, of course, the third game on the weekend, York 9 and Pacific FC. Pacific FC grabbing a clean sheet, a rare clean sheet, their first in 14 matches.
Yeah, it was a very weirdly like reminiscent match to the last time York 9 played against Valor. Mm-hmm. Another 2-0 loss with a late goal. Like a 92nd minute goal on an open
from half.
Yeah, from half. Like those goals, they are sort of like you know, six men on the ice and you've pulled your goalie. But, mm-hmm. I mean, it was a weird case of deja vu. And we'll have Noah Verhoeven on the show coming up in a couple minutes where we can talk about that as well. Some other developments over at Pacific FC. But it was good to see Pacific kind of confident again. A lot of their pieces have returned to action. Marcus Haber made his return as well from injury. And I think they're starting to get kind of look comfortable in terms of their fall campaign. Maybe they can stage a bit of a turnaround. It's still very early. Mm-hmm. They still have plenty of games, something like 12 games, 13 or 11 games. So there's opportunities there for them to return back into this mix. And it all starts at West Hill Stadium, which Noah and I will soon get into. But yeah, they're reopening their stadium after a three-game away leg. New grandstand. We've seen some photos. Mm-hmm. Looks majestic.
It does.
Looks absolutely fantastic. And I think it's going to be a really cool atmosphere. I think Vancouver Island's already embraced soccer in a really cool way. So hopefully we'll see them in full voice on Saturday when they take on Valor FC, who's, my goodness, traveling across the country again.
Yeah,
on a very short rest.
Quickly, we should talk about York 9, though. Now failing and now lost to Valor and Pacific. They were kind of in the contention there, maybe dropping a little bit. Are you worried about that if you're a York 9 fan?
Yeah, this is the second sort of scoring issues that we've seen emerge from York 9 this season. There was a slump of something like 300 minutes or 500 minutes or whatever it was, mm-hmm. without a goal, and that was brutal. But this is kind of becoming a talking point, maybe something that Jimmy Brennan doesn't want, which is really weird because they're coming off of that 6-2 win against HFX. So you're hoping that they didn't burn through all their goals, you know, in one match. It all comes down to Rodrigo Gattas, Ryan Telfer, and these guys aren't necessarily line breakers. They have moments of magic that allow them to score. I think they need, it's ironic, and I wrote about it on the breakdown, but I think York 9 needs a number 9. They need a body, and it's clearly not Simon Ajay. He's not doing what he needs to be doing, both from a physical perspective or from a scoring perspective. Mm. And if I'm Jimmy Brennan, I'm looking around the league at guys like Anthony Novak, like Taron Campbell or Marcus Haber, like Tomi Amiobi or Easton Ngaro, or any number of these tall central forwards who are just like utterly dominating their assignments. And you're looking in your own ranks like, where's Michael Cox? Where's Simon Ajay? What's going on here? So I think this is one of those areas that York 9 needs to address if their goal scoring is going to be fixed, because if you have that, you pull defenders away from their natural position. You open up space for guys like Telfer, Gattas, Porter, Aparicio. These guys can maneuver around that space in a more meaningful way. So tactically, I think they need that. They don't have it, and it's starting to hurt them. And we're joined by Pacific FC midfielder Noah Verhoeven, who joins Center Circle Live on the back of a 2-0 win over York 9 FC. Noah, thank you for joining the show.
Yeah, thank you. I'm happy to be on the show this week.
So you guys go into York Lions Stadium. You know that York 9 FC has just lost 2-0 to Valor on the back of this kind of weird circumstance where they push their goalkeeper up and then they eat a goal from midfield. And then over the course of those 90 minutes, Noah, Pacific FC basically inflicts the exact same punishment on York 9. What did you guys make of that game, and have you ever seen anything like this where a result so closely mimics the following week?
Yeah, I mean, I know there's, you know, as a team, you're going to watch film, and it's great that, you know, we saw how Valor played against them, how they adapted, how Valor adapted to what York was doing. So I think, you know, it was good to have some film on them and be able to see how we wanted to set up. You know, we knew we had a game plan coming in. And so we trained for the week. And, you know, luckily, I think the game plan was exactly how we planned it to be. And yeah, it was a great result that we're now looking to build off and have some consistency.
So you guys have been on the road for a few games now, I think 3 games in a row. Players are starting to return to full health. What is the state of the team like as you guys approach the first home game in a little while?
Yeah, I mean, with a full squad, I don't think we could ask for anything else at this point. We haven't had a full squad for, I think, almost every game. And so now to have, of course, we still have Marcel, who's a big part of our team. He's still injured, but he's getting back as well. So once we're at full strength again and everybody's ready, I think it's just a question for, you know, the coaches now trying to find the right lineup for each game and not thinking of, you know, maybe how do we set up in the long run, but with all the options available, how do we set up, you know, to win this game and maybe some of the players start getting more rest and things like that. So I think it's great for the team.
I know you guys have done a lot of rotation over the last few weeks, especially as the injury sort of to Marcus Haber put some things into question, a few other player injuries. But predominantly, I would say for the most part, as you mentioned, a lot of your players have returned now. So you guys head into the Saturday game against Valor feeling pretty healthy. Do you think that we'll see kind of a similar rotation through the end of this fall, or is there a starting lineup that sort of emerged? Like, what's Michael Silberbauer's philosophy on how he's going to turn to you guys for some of the trickier upcoming matches?
Yeah, I think Michael's a coach that definitely thinks, you know, he's very smart in terms of what he wants long term, like towards the end of the season, what he'll be looking for. And I think he's also smart in, you know, knowing what he needs right now and exactly what's going to win him, you know, the next game against Valor or what was able to win us the game against York. So I think he's happy right now at a point where he has multiple options in different positions. And I mean, one of the biggest things for us, as we've seen throughout the season, is having an actual center back pairing. It's been tough having a lot of injuries to the back line. And so I think now that we're at full strength in the back, I think we're a dangerous team.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think I've ever really seen a situation like this before where players will play in like the back line or as defensive midfielders in one game, and then in your next game they're used as like attacking midfielders, wingers, even forwards. So having these guys all back perfectly aligns in time for Saturday's match with Valor, as we mentioned. But it is a special occasion for your club. You guys have a little bit of a reconstruction, a new grandstand in place, and as such, there will be a reopening ceremony of sorts at West Hill Stadium. Have you had a chance to go check it out yet and see what it looks like, and what are your impressions?
Yeah, for us, it's been an amazing experience to be around all the construction and, you know, just see things come together. We're at West Hills every day, so, I mean, it's just amazing to see how things have progressed. And you know, we know that the ownership is really doing all they can to help drive the community and, you know, get the supporters really, you know, feeling like they're close to the team and they can interact with us. And with such a tight stadium, I think it's amazing. And the extra grandstand now has just made it, you know, it's just made it even better. And yeah, I think it's just amazing to see it all come together.
So if you're Valor FC, you're coming into this, like, you know, your experience at your home ground, if you're Valor, is this cavernous Investors Group field, you know, massive stands, you know, football lines on the grass. But I think going into a place like West Hills, which is very, you know, intimate, a very charming stadium, how much of a factor is the atmosphere or the environment of your team when you're traveling away from home? And conversely, I mean, you know how the fans are on Vancouver Island. You got a very raucous bunch up in the stands. Do you think that that's a huge advantage for you guys going into this match?
Yeah, I think the home fans are always a huge advantage for us. I think we have some of the best fans in the league, of course. And I think we also have one of the best stadiums in the league just because of how intimate it is. And and how we're able to interact with them. And, you know, I think Marcus said it the other day. He said, when you're on the pitch, it's not hard to look up and you know, you see your family, you see every supporter, you see all their faces, everything. So it's very, it gives you a good feeling. And you're just, you know, when you have an atmosphere like that, you just want to go out and impress the fans.
And I think one of the cool things about Pacific FC, especially the developments at West Hill Stadium, is this is not where the investment sort of stops. You know, the club announced earlier in June that they'd be investing $5 million on a 55,000 square foot, training facility for you guys, which is an incredible development for Vancouver Island. But Noah, I'm going to turn this question to you as a player. What is one thing that you really would love to see in a training facility that might not be completely normal? You know, there's always like the training equipment. You probably will have a pool, but is there like a special thing that you'd love to see implemented at your new training facility?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, you know, one of the biggest things I think the players are looking for is a lot of the pitches we play on, especially in Canada right now, are turf pitches. And so I think the players would like to, at some point, you know, of course it's not up to us, but, and we understand that there's difficulties, but I think we'd like to have, you know, grass pitches and have a higher standard of pitches that we're playing on week in, week out. And, you know, I think that's a big thing that most of the players, I'm sure, talk about. And, I think over the years, you know, we'll see more grass pitches. But, yeah, I think for the training facility, it'd be excellent.
I mean, for my money, I'd be looking for, you know, world-class chefs. I just saw, like, a nice little documentary on the Washington Redskins, I believe it was. They were showing off their kitchen, and it was like a gourmet five-star restaurant for those guys.
Yeah. What about a chef would be nice for sure.
What about like a FIFA room? Any? Do you guys have like, you know, FIFA 19 players?
Yeah, we have a couple good FIFA players on the team. I'm sure we'll get a team lounge or something together in a facility in the future. But I mean, I think some of the other players would agree with me in saying that the pitch is still the most important.
Yeah, it's a very professional answer, and absolutely. You know, in terms of bettering your abilities on the ball during training, there's nothing like natural grass. Noah,
yeah.
You guys will be back in action on Saturday against Valor FC. We're really looking forward to seeing the new and improved West Hill Stadium in person. Thank you very much for joining the show, and best of luck on Saturday.
Yeah, thank you very much.
I was Noah Verhoeven from Pacific FC.
Yeah, I don't know if I fully buy the grass pitch thing. I mean, I understand that it's important, but like, if you gave me carte blanche, I feel like I would have like a 108-inch television with like a PlayStation 4 fully equipped with FIFA surround sound.
We want the frills.
Yeah.
Everybody wants the frills.
It's about the frills.
Yeah, I don't know what I would want.
What would you want, Marty?
I don't know what I want. Like a decent kitchen, but then I would use it. Like, I wouldn't want other people to use it. I don't know. Or actually a coffee maker, like an espresso machine would be sweet.
One of those giant coffee makers that can make like any variation of Starbucks.
That would be so sweet.
That's a very Vancouver Island thing though.
Yeah. Or like Seattle, Pacific or Northwest adjacent, all the same thing. Yeah.
Totally.
Okay. I got three questions this week again, Armin.
You always have three questions, Marty.
So we were talking about York 9 scoring woes. Are you buying the way that Jimmy Brennan is sort of like platooning between Gattas and Simon Ajayi? It's very interesting. So, for example, on Saturday, Gattas started and then Ajayi came on. Now, he said that he would play Ajayi because he's a bigger body against some of the MLS sides. And it kind of worked against the Impact in the first leg. But do you see that working or how would you switch that up?
I mean, I'm not sure about Ajayi's kind of future at the club in terms of whether he's going to be a starter. I think there's a role for him, but I think he's over the course of the season shown that he doesn't have the kind of scoring ability that you need from your number nine, whereas Rodrigo Gattas does. But then Rodrigo Gattas to me is your second striker. Mm-hmm. So if you're playing in this kind of, you know, pseudo 4-2-3-1 where you have these two wingers, but also you have Ryan Telfer who kind of goes centrally. Manny Aparicio is an attacking midfielder, but he plays as like an 8. It's a very confusing lineup on paper. And so you need a guy that's that point guy who at the very least you know he's just going to offer you the physical frame, that ability to battle and win a ball and get other guys into it. Like Rodrigo Gattas is the guy that plays off of the center forward.
I was wondering if you couldn't play Ajay as like the one focal point and still put Gattas in.
Yeah,
like
the thing is you're sacrificing one player for another. So like
Porter,
maybe? It could be Porter. It could be, I don't know, Murufushi. But then each one of those guys brings such an important element to like the total picture. So for me, I think Gattas is a good option off the bench and for rotation. I think he's a game changer, but I don't know if he's necessarily the number 9 you need just because he's diminutive. And all of your players are diminutive, and eventually it becomes a size issue across the park. Mm-hmm. So I think if you can find a number 9 in the form of Thomas Skublak or Taron Campbell or Anthony Novak, you have to pounce on it because I think that's what they're lacking is a number 9. So I think moving forward, I would start Gattas, and you know, if I need another striker, I might even consider throwing Ryan Telfer a little higher up the field, just because like you need bodies, you need that penetration in the back line, and I don't know if they necessarily have it.
Okay, question 2: who's more underrated, Anthony Novak or Taron Campbell?
Ooh, good question.
See, I think it's Taron Campbell because here he is. We didn't even mention it in the show. He's now leading the Golden Boot race with that goal at York Line Stadium.
Yeah, Taron Campbell's a quiet guy by nature. If you've ever like sat down and spoken to him, you know he's very reserved, a very modest guy. So I don't think that he's one of those strikers that like to chase the spotlight. Even his goal celebrations are pretty muted in terms of, you know, this guy's like adding to a Golden Boot leading tally. Every single goal counts. So I would say that in terms of personality, he's definitely less in your face than Anthony Novak. But I don't know. I feel like Anthony Novak is demonstrating the same sort of qualities that I saw in Jonathan Osorio, which is like this unquantifiable X factor that some soccer players have at a young age that makes you like see more potential in them in the future. Like, I think Taron Campbell's a good player, don't get me wrong, and he's definitely has the potential to develop into both a natural starter, a real goal scoring threat. He already is those things. But there's something about Anthony Novak that makes me think like he has the ability to turn heads by not just scoring goals, but scoring big goals and scoring important goals. And I think that has sort of the potential to develop into a move to MLS or a move to somewhere even greater. I guess that makes him more overrated than
Taron Campbell.
So I guess I would agree with you, but it's for different reasons.
Yeah.
I just think Taron Campbell is just a modest figure, and it precludes him from becoming that guy under the spotlight.
Well, and it's funny because Campbell's goals, like I think Saturday was a great example of that. And some of the goals he scored, he just seems to be in the right place at the right time. Great positional player. But, you know, the way that he completely destroyed Di Chiara on that, he just got his body in front and it was like no mistake. Great header. But then you look at like Novak's goals and I think it was against Pacific FC when he kind of flicked up and volleyed it. I think
that was his first
five minutes playing for Forge FC.
No, I think in terms of what I've seen from the two of them, they're both great strikers. I just think Novak has that little something special. Call it a je ne sais quoi, as it were. That makes him a little bit more... hey, we have Arcadio. He's been teaching me here and there. So
yes, we too. I can't feel that.
To answer your question, I would say Taron Campbell is a little more underrated.
Okay. Do you want to ask one or do you want me to do the third one?
Let's do the third one.
Okay. Okay. And while we're on Anthony Novak here, question 3. What did he have for breakfast, do we think?
What did he have for breakfast?
Yeah. What gives you a brace? You know, breakfast brace.
For me, nothing beats a breakfast at like one of those old diners that serve like $3 eggs. So you get like a thing of scrambled eggs, a thing of potatoes, some bacon strips, toast, glass of orange juice. That's it. Bob's your uncle.
Yeah, my stomach is just rolling.
But also, that's probably not like the kind of diet that an athlete has. That sounds more like a journalist's diet, to be honest.
I was gonna say Eggs Benedict, but then I'm like, oh yeah, that's not an athlete's diet.
Journalist's diet is that plus like a glass of whiskey that just never ends.
Yeah, maybe had a BLT.
Maybe.
We were talking about BLTs earlier.
You know, no, you know what he had?
We only talked about food.
No, 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 I'm sorry. I feel like Bobby Smyrniotis is one of those guys that's like chicken club, you know?
Yeah, maybe. Because
of the protein, you know, you get your chicken breast or whatever. It's just like lean meat that's not like, you know, too fatty, too rich.
Do we think he's like Bobby Smyrniotis is handing out food for them in the morning?
He's probably got a meal plan. He's definitely not crushing the sweet and sour chicken or those L12 sesame chicken specials like he used to.
Anthony Novak, big food guy. Okay, we'll see you next week.